Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. So welcome, ladies and gentlemen, men, to a very halcyon day's day in the clearing of The Good Listening To Show. I'm Chris Grimes, and this is Antonia Wade, who is the Global Chief Marketing Officer at PwC. And Antonia was passed the golden baton to be in The Good Listening To Show by Timothy Tim Hughes, who is part of DLA Ignite and a social selling expert. And I was absolutely thrilled when he passed you the golden baton, Antonia, to be here. And this is a special Leadership Reflections episode of the show, where I invite my guests to share their leadership lessons learned along their way, and who better to come into the clearing than Antonia Wade. So good morning to you. How's morale? What's your story of the day? Antonia Wade.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me, Chris. It's great to be here in the clearing. Well, it's a cold and windy Friday in London, and so I guess in part happy that we're close to the weekend, but slightly wishing that this internal feeling winter was over. I have to say that usually I'm lucky enough to do trips to warm and foreign climes, but the various reasons I haven't been traveling that much recently, so it does feel like I'm very definitely ready for the winter to be over and for spring to start to emerge. So
yes, spring has sprung, and I've noticed there are seagulls on the chimney pots nearby, so the chaos in Bristol is all about to kick off again. So just to blow a bit of very, very happy seasoned smoke at you. Sorry, I say seasoned because you are a seasoned CMO. You are the Global Chief Marketing Officer of PwC, and what's intriguing about you is you're used to operating in complex global matrixed organizations. And if I may, I'm going to call you the maitre d' of the matrices of all things marketing at PwC, a bit like I've written a poem for you.
Very nice. Love it.
Homage to you. You're also Marketing Week's Marketeer of the Year in 2024. And what Leadership Reflections is all about, using the curated structure of this show, is it also helps business leaders very much like yourself to tell a warmer, more authentic, human and connecting story. And I'm really privileged to be able to curate you through the structure and the journey of the show. So there's going to be a clearing, a tree, a lovely, juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, a golden baton, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So as we go through, go where you like, how you like, when you like, as deep as you like, into all things reflections on leadership as we go through. So Antonia Wade, first of all then, what is a clearing for you in your doubtless incredibly hectic life in being the global head of marketing at PwC? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational, and able to think, your clearing being your serious happy place?
Well, I guess at a physical level, actually, at this place here, the study that I have, I have two children and a dog and a husband. And so it's somewhat chaotic outside the study. But this is kind of the place where it's kind of mine, and I keep it how I want to keep it. And this is the place where I go to do my thinking, my work. As I wrote my book, I wrote a lot of it here. But I guess psychologically, there's a beach that I went to very many years ago in India. And I think that from a kind of psychological perspective, that's where I would go to kind of really think deeply about what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. I think sometimes it helps to not just have a physical place, but to also have a kind of mental place that you sort of go and kind of like relive where you were and what you were thinking at the time. So I think a story of two parts.
I love that. And borrowing from the at what three words, just I'm going to arrive with a tree rather comically within your clearing shortly, a bit Waiting for Godot-esque, a bit deliberately existential because of my acting background. But using the what three words, whereabouts in India is the beach we're talking about?
Oh, right. Oh, gosh. It's right down in the south of Kerala.
Lovely. And indeed, we've got a choice. We can either come into your sort of woman cave within your own home sanctuary, or we can go to the Indian beach. So where would you prefer that I now arrive comically with a tree?
Well, I think probably it feels a bit more appropriate to do it in a beach, not least because if you arrive with a tree in my study, you might break the roof of my house, which would cause me more stress than calm.
Yes, and particularly as you've already got a dog, two kids and a husband, me coming in with a sort of weird shrubbery would indeed be strange. So let's go to the beach in Kerala, you said, didn't you, in India?
Kerala, yeah.
Lovely. So this is where you've been kind enough to have thought about the construct of 5-4-3-2-1. We've had 5 minutes, Antonia Wade, Global Chief Marketing Officer at PwC, to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's a bit, oh, squirrels. That's where the random squirrels are going to come in. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. It's not a memory test. So over to you to curate us through the shaking of the canopy of your tree as you see fit. Four things that have shaped you, first of all.
Well, I mean, I think inevitably your parents shape you, don't they? I was very lucky. I had extremely supportive parents who were very much on my side. I don't think they ever read a school report or took parent-teacher meetings particularly seriously. They're kind of, unwavering confidence that I would fulfill my potential and be the best person that I could be, I think is something that inevitably shapes you. And so I think I was very lucky, not just in terms of what they did for me in my early life, but also great role models now that I'm a parent myself. So I'd say that's the first thing that shaped me.
And their strategy of delicious laissez-faireness, I love that. They never read a school report, but knew all along that you'd realize your full potential. How extraordinary. And how does that inform your own parenting with your two kids now?
Well, I have to admit, I do actually read the reports.
Yes.
I think that there's something about just feeling confident that your kids will be okay and yes, allowing them to be the people that they want to be. And I don't know, you'll probably have to ask them. I'm sure all of us, to some extent, end up on a somewhat of a psychiatrist couch at 40, yes, blaming our parents for things. But I hope I've done a reasonable job. I think that the second thing that shaped me, I studied architecture at university, and even in my A-levels, I did sciences and arts. And I think that studying architecture is a really wonderful kind of mixture of creativity and pragmatism. And certainly as I think about my career in marketing, somebody once said to me, oh, it's a bit odd to go from architecture to marketing, but I actually think there's a lot of similarities because you have to balance off, you know, the kind of creativity with the pragmatism and practicalities, yes, of making money and, you know, running big teams and kind of running an operation. So I think that that's been something that's been pretty formative and shaped me. That's definitely a part of it.
It's a humongously complex brief that you do have as head of marketing. And also, I know that before PwC, you were at Capita, Accenture, Thomson Reuters, running their, you know, laughing in the face of budgets of billions, as you are responsible for all the sort of messaging and the marketing concerned with that.
I wish it was billions. It's not quite that, but certainly responsible for making billions of dollars of revenue. So yeah, it's, I think it's, I've been lucky in my career to have found really great environments where there's lots of complicated problems to solve. I enjoy, as you said in the introduction, working in these matrixed environments. Because it means that the problems that you're solving are kind of compounded, because you've got an interesting and intriguing kind of political environment to solve the problems in. So, I think that probably comes to the third thing that shaped me. I spent about 3 years, maybe slightly longer, in the Treasury in my early career. And it was in the kind of golden days of Gordon Brown in the Treasury, in the Blair period. I felt like I learned a huge amount, even though I kind of obviously haven't carried on in a political career. But I feel like I learned a lot about how to navigate political systems, how to think about problems at a kind of macro and a micro level. And I would definitely say, you know, if people are wondering about what to do with their careers, having a stint in public service is a really interesting and I think quite important thing to do. So I'm very glad that I did it. I learned a lot from it. And I think certainly it's helped me to really think quite a lot about how to operate in a complicated environment.
And that was your induction to the world of Moultrie matrices, was actually a governmental position.
Yeah, I mean, it's not matrixed in quite the same way as a big global corporate, but certainly trying to balance, you know, competing demands on kind of the public purse, and how do you think about, you know, what you pursue from a policy perspective. I just think it gave me a very interesting perspective on the world, and I'm glad that I did it.
Fantastic. Lovely. These are wonderful shapages so far. It's a shapage number 4.
So I've always, as you can see behind me, I've always been a huge reader. I read a novel a week at least, if not more. And I'm pretty eclectic in terms of my reading tastes. So I'll read anything kind of science fiction right through to kind of heavy prose and everything in between. And I think that having a broad base in terms of reading, but also just, I think it helps to encourage your curiosity. I think it helps to inspire your imagination. I think that it kind of takes you away from yourself and allows you to have those kind of clearing moments, if you will, but within a book. I think it's really good for your mental health. And so escaping into books has been something that I've done since I could start reading. And, you know, that's been several decades.
What's the book of the moment, if I may ask?
Oh, yeah. I'm reading the latest David Nichols book. And then I'm also reading, there's a husband and wife couple called Nikki French who write kind of interesting sort of crime thrillers. And I'm so reading the latest one of theirs as well.
Wonderful stuff. Great stuff. So that's 4 shapages in the bag. Lovely. Thank you. And now 3 things that inspire you, Antonia.
Yeah, so I talked about the fact that I studied architecture, but actually I also really enjoy art as well. And I feel extremely inspired by looking at art and visiting interesting buildings. I think that, you know, if you go and see a French medieval cathedral, it kind of lifts you out of yourself. Yeah, I think that it just creates a kind of link with the past. Again, a bit like what I was saying about reading, it kind of takes you out of yourself and helps you to sort of remember that there's a bigger world out there and a broader perspective. So
you have a delightful, multifaceted clearing awareness, actually. I think I'm tuning into many, many ways of you finding a serious happy place in what you're up to in a life that, on the face of it, you know, when you have a job title like yours, it sounds like, how does that person sleep? Because being global, you know, being called global head of, a bit like some corporates can call people, you know, global head of creativity sometimes, you think, crikey, that's such a sort of universe-wide scope. But what's really lovely is your ability to find real tranquility in pockets of time.
Thank you. I think it's quite hard to be the best you can be on a kind of daily basis if you're not able to do that.
Yes.
And, you know, any job will, any big job anyway, will ask you to work 25 hours a day you know, 8 days a week, right? You're never going to get to the end of the inbox.
Yes.
You're never going to feel like you've finished and, you know, all emails answered, all tasks of the week done. And so if you can't carve out that space for yourself, I think that you can find yourself working so relentlessly at the exclusion of everything else. But actually, I think that the quality of your leadership and the quality of your work product that kind of diminishes as a result of that. So I work quite hard and I try really hard to, you know, make sure that I am pretty balanced, not just about, you know, myself, but also making sure that I spend time with my family, my friends, because that's kind of what's made me who I am.
That's a very profound and insightful leadership reflection of itself.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
How big is your team that you are responsible for?
Yeah, so I've got about 200 people around the world, but then we also work with a lot of agencies. So there's probably another few hundred on that. And then there's a broader marketing community within PwC, which is probably totals into the thousands. So it's a big team. It's a global team. I've got people everywhere from sort of Seattle to Singapore. And so again, you know, making sure that you can be as good as you want to be and kind of working across those timeframes. I have to say it's very helpful living in the UK. I've been asked in previous jobs to move to Asia or move to the US. But I think doing a global job, it's helpful to be in the middle of the time zone. And I certainly, you know, whilst I can some days get up very early and some days stay up very late, my weekends are pretty sacrosanct. So I sometimes have to fly places on Sunday. So for example, this Sunday, I'm going to Prague because I've got a meeting that starts on Monday morning there. But in the main, like my weekends, it'd be very rare for anyone who works for me to get an email from me at the weekends.
Yes. You're reminding me of that lovely leadership quote, leaders lead by example, whether they intend to or not. And I don't doubt that you're transmitting a really good example of remaining boundaried and clear about where, you know, a work-life balance really and how defined and important it needs to be.
Yeah, I mean, because if I'm emailing at the weekend, even if I don't intend for people to respond at the weekend, they feel like they have to, right?
Yes.
And so you have to just, you get to a certain stage of leadership where you have to your point, realize that you are setting an example, even if it's inadvertent. And if everyone knows that I'm on holiday and yet I'm still emailing 20 times a day, then I'm basically sending a signal that it's not okay to take a holiday. And I think that that's really unreasonable. So I try really hard to be very disciplined about that.
I have to say, it's very inspirational. And I think for many people watching, that's the sort of leader and manager that you'd like, that appreciates that, you know, the human desire to find boundary is really, really important.
I think it's kind of interesting as well, isn't it? And I know in this, we're talking at kind of more positive inspirations, but a bit like, you know, when you're a child and I don't know, you feel like you've been unfairly treated by your parents and you're like, when I'm a grown up, I'll never do that. And, you know, we've all had points in our career where, you know, we've had bosses who we have felt to be unreasonable, and you think, "Gosh, when I'm in that role, I will never do that."
Yes.
And I've held pretty true to that. Like I haven't always had high empathy bosses that, you know, think it's not okay to email people at midnight on a Sunday night or whatever it is. And I think that those experiences shape you as well, right? Because you say, actually, when I'm in that kind of position of power, I'm not going to do that. I think it's unreasonable, and then you have to kind of hold yourself to account for that.
Yes. And if I may, something you may not have had this feedback before, it seems quite zen-like what you're transmitting, which is really nice because it's got tranquility and it's got poise.
Not sure my team would always agree with you.
Certainly, yes. That's right. Well, I'll interview one of them next and get the other side of the coin.
Yes. maybe you've got me on like Friday morning. It's obviously my zen morning.
I have to say, I watched a couple of films about you in researching you, and I was really looking forward to the conversation because I thought, gosh, he's really calm, which was, I wouldn't expect that if you just go for just job titles alone when it's such an important remit of being, you know, the title's very impressive to be global chief of something such a big, one of the planet's biggest global monoliths.
Maybe that gets to the second thing that inspires me. I mean, I have done global jobs for quite some time, and I am genuinely inspired by being able to go to different parts of the world and see how people think about things differently. You know, if you go to the Middle East or you go to Asia, you just get such a different perspective, and I find that endlessly interesting and intriguing and inspirational. You do get the opportunity to meet people from PwC and our clients. And as I said, like just such different views on the world. And I do find that inspiring because partly, there's just something kind of intriguing about humanity, but also it's quite grounding and reminds you that, you know, the environment that you grow up in and the context that you have really shapes who you are. And I think it's quite interesting to be sort of jolted out of that. And so I feel very lucky actually. And people often say to me, how do you deal with the travel? And I'm like, I really genuinely enjoy it because I find our people inspiring. I find our clients inspiring. And it's just, even if I don't always agree, it's just interesting to get very different perspectives. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the second place of inspiration. And that's probably why I've always done these big kind of global jobs, because I'm just sort of genuinely intrigued by why people think about things the way that they think about them. And it is just interesting going and immersing yourself in a different place and understanding why people react to things very differently to how we do it in the UK.
You've reminded me of my favourite job title of all, which I often offer people as a promotion when I'm facilitating and coaching myself, which is, we all need to aspire to just be global head of myself, you know, be global head of yourself, which allows you to do any role or remit because, you know, you're on your own path of authenticity.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely something about challenging yourself to continue to be interested and curious. I mean, I think it can be very easy, particularly with a big job, to become very kind of focused on the task at hand. but I, as I said about kind of reading and art, like if you're not able to lift up out of that every now and again, I do think the work becomes less good. You become a more boring person. And so, you know, as I said, like, it's not always dancing to the airport and can't wait to get on the plane. But I do tend to, once I'm there, really like immerse myself and take an interest in it and eat the local food and ask for recommendations. I try and always carve out a few hours to take a walk around a place and kind of understand it. So
yeah,
I think that, I definitely... And I do feel very lucky being in a global role that I am able to go to these interesting places and meet these interesting people. And I think if I didn't have that, then I might find the job more of a chore, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
There's a sort of stoicism and a sense of carpe diem inequality in what you're describing as well, and about being truly present to whatever opportunities in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, I think I tend to be somebody who tries to find upsides in things, that you do these kind of, personality test type thing.
Yeah.
And I'm always, and I tend to be what they call an optimizer. So whatever the situation I'm in, I tend to find the best possible thing that I can in it.
Wonderful. So just doing the maths of where we're up to in the tree, I think that's three things that have inspired. Is that correct?
I think so, yeah.
And now we're on to the squirrels. Borrow from the film Up, what are your two monsters of distraction? I've heard it called recently shiny object syndrome. Irrespective of anything else is going on for you or wherever you find yourself in your global remit, what are your squirrels of distraction? Oh, squirrels.
Do you know, it's funny. I've got a very little, very cute and shaggy terrier. And so I spend my life with the dog being distracted by squirrels.
Can I ask your dog's name as well?
Yeah, he's called Biscuit.
Biscuit the squirrel guard. I love that.
Yeah. Well, he was named by the kids. So I think he's lucky he's not called Batman or something. But yes. And actually, he's not actually here. Otherwise, I'd show you him. But he's very sweet looking. He looks like a little teddy bear. So luckily, he's very good and patient with children because little kids come running up to him and always want to stroke him because he looks quite sweet. So, yes, he's.
I just wonder what would happen if a kid ran up dressed as a squirrel.
Well, yes, so that might be a different reaction. 100% my children. I mean, you know, I will put down anything in order to give them the attention and whatever it is that they need. And it's kind of interesting because when they're babies, you sort of think that that's going to be the time when they kind of need you the most. And as they grow into teenagers and young adults, you actually realize they need you sort of even more then as they're learning how to be grown-ups and think about the world. And so I would put down anything and everything for them. It's interesting too, because sometimes you kind of have to remind yourself that the things that they sometimes are coming to you with feel quite small for you, but they're obviously very big for them. Yes. And so it's important that you kind of give it the attention that it deserves. And so I find them, you know, really enjoyable. It's a nice squirrel to chase. But, you know, again, I think that helps to keep you balanced in your work.
How old are your squirrels currently? You mentioned they're teenagers.
Yeah, 15 and 13. So one's going through GCSEs and the other is, it's funny, the younger one's a boy and he's just done that thing of going from looking and feeling like a little boy to suddenly being like a teenager and loafing around and being generally eating everything in the fridge. So
I call my squad the plague of locusts with the fridge.
Yeah.
And my son is suddenly 6'3" and I'm getting patted on the head quite a lot. And it's quite alarming. Stan is 18.
Yeah, definitely. Well, my 13-year-old has just become taller than me. So, yes, quite a lot of that goes on, even though it's like a centimetre. Yes, I still get quite a lot of patted on the head.
Is he taller than his dad yet? Because that's the other thing that stereotypically begins to happen, doesn't it?
Not yet, but I don't think he's far away. So, yeah, I think definitely that. It's not really a squirrel per se, but I really enjoy having friends over and entertaining. I love cooking. And so I can be quite distracted by thinking about what are we going to eat tonight, what I'm going to make, looking up recipes, trying new things. I find it a very pleasurable distraction. I probably shouldn't say it, but there are probably some meetings that I'm in where I'm probably thinking more about how I should be marinating chicken than the order of the day in the meeting. It's somewhat of a squirrel. I don't know if that quite kind of counts, but I definitely...
It completely counts. I'm there. The way to my heart is definitely through my stomach.
Exactly. But really, I love cooking at home. We moved into this house just before COVID and it was all done before we moved in. But the people who lived here before obviously really liked cooking. So I've got a really nice kitchen. I love it. And just spending time in the kitchen. You can't worry about too much if you're chopping up an onion and thinking about kind of what you want to make. So I'm pretty experimental, but I'm a good cook, so I can kind of get away with it. I like cooking more than baking. My daughter loves baking, so she takes care of the puddings and I do the rest.
What a dream team. Fantastic. Yeah. And if I may ask, what's your signature dish of the moment?
I don't know that I have a signature dish per se, but my grandmother was Italian, so I'm pretty good at Italian food, but I also really enjoy spicy food, so I do quite a lot of curries and things as well.
Oh, nom 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 nom, if I could just say that. Thank you. And now I think we're into the one which is a quirky or unusual fact about you, Antonia Wade, that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
Yeah, so a few years ago, I got really into photography and I really enjoyed it. And I was the sort of runner-up to the runner-up, if you know what I mean, to the Wildlife Photographer of the Year Award.
Whoa.
With a photo that I took of a bird. My husband loves bird watching and loves birds. And so I had the camera out at an opportune moment. And I have to say, now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, I should toss the camera off again. I should start going again. But something that I, that's a random fact.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
And do please share that photograph. I'd be intrigued to see it. Yeah. Wonderful. We've shaken your tree. Hurrah. So now we stay in the clearing, which is in the beach in Kerala in India. And now we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. So when you're at purpose and in flow, Antonia, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world?
So I really love working, and I feel like I have such an exciting and interesting job. And so I love looking at creative work from agencies. I love reading ideas for ad copy. I love thinking about the kind of end-to-end campaign experience. And so when I'm in my flow, I just really enjoy getting into the work. I love talking to the team about why they've made the decisions that they've made. I love understanding from brilliant creatives why they've come up with the recommendation that they have. I really enjoy offering a different perspective and helping the team to move the work along. So that's when I'm really happy, is when I'm in the work with the team and we feel like we're creating things that are worthwhile and interesting and different.
And there is a very exciting moment coming up, which is show us your QR code, please. I'm going to point people to your book that I know that you wrote during a period of gardening leave. And whereas most people might have just lay down and slept a lot, apparently you thought, nope, I'm going to write a book, and we'll come on to that.
Well, actually, it was not really me. It was more my husband said, I think we're going to get divorced if you're knocking around the house for 3 months with nothing to do. So I was like, fair enough, I'll find something to do.
So your husband is an Antonia whisperer. He knows what makes you happy.
Exactly.
So we are going to show a QR code to your book, which is called Transforming the B2B Buyer Journey.
Thank you.
Which I congratulate you for. That is coming up, I promise. So thank you for that, Alchemy Gold. You love work, and that's fantastic.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So now I'm going to award you with a cake. Hurrah! So you mentioned your daughter does the baking rather than you, but do you like cake, Antonia?
Everybody likes cake, of course.
Of course you do, and thank you for
controversially saying. I think carrot cake's my favorite. I was thinking about, like, what's my favorite, and chocolate's obviously up there, but I think I do like a good carrot cake, I have to say.
In fact, I've got a comedy prop that I occasionally whip out. It's a cake that I think is going to be pleasing to you. Boom, a carrot cake.
There we go, perfect.
That's a dog toy, apparently, so you should give that your lovely pooch. But anyway, now you get to put a cherry on your carrot cake, which is stuff like, what's your favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succor, Antonia, and pulled you toward your future?
Yeah, so somebody said to me a few years ago, you are where you are today because of the decisions you made 5 years ago. And I really love that, because it really grounds me. And as I think about the decisions that I make today, and that's going to create the person that I am in 5 years time. And I find that very helpful from a perspective point of view. But it also, I think, helps me to make good decisions now, because I'm sort of thinking forward 5 years. And I also find it, you know, like when I think about, where am I now? Am I where I want to be in my life? Am I doing the things that I want to do? Like, the reminder that I kind of set, like, I set myself up 5 years ago and I made the best decisions that I could with the information that I had at the time. So I often talk to my team about that as well, which is, you know, how are you thinking about what you're doing today as an investment in yourself 5 years forward? And so, yeah, that's something that I find quite inspirational.
That's really, really relatable. Interestingly, this whole construct that I'm here privileged to talk to you doing is 5 years old. And I remember setting this up 5 years ago. So that was an intriguing insight. Thank you.
There you go, Chris. You are where you are today because of the decision you made 5 years ago. So it's come to pass.
And if it wasn't for the pandemic, I wouldn't have even had the idea. And so that's what's quite interesting. And do you sometimes remember to realize that, oh, I'm here now because of that 5 years ago, or are you always thinking 5 years ahead?
No, definitely. It's a retrospective as well. And it's, I think it's a way of appreciating and acknowledging the fact that you're in a continuum, and, you know, I think it's important to respect the decisions you made in the past. As I said, I am a strong believer that you always make the best decisions you can with the information that you have.
Yes.
Right. And so therefore, you know, if you've achieved things, that's because you had good information, you asked the right questions, you make good decisions, and that's kind of set you forward. And but also, you know, there's also, of course, there are times in your life where you feel like you're not having a great time. And so it's also then important to take ownership back of that and say, okay, yeah, but I have equity in this. Like I can make decisions today that mean that in 5 years' time, I'm not going to be in the place that I feel like I am today. And so I find it quite inspiring in bad times as well as good.
Yes. Which then anchors to that other stoic thing of, and this too shall pass, even when it's tough sometimes.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right.
Next question. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given, Antonia?
I think, so I had a really great boss a few years ago. Their advice to me was that you can't control everything and you can't be everything to everyone, no matter how you want to. So when you're thinking about where you spend your time, particularly in a work context, what are the things that only you can do, and spend your time doing those things? And so feel okay about delegating the stuff that you think that somebody else can do. Feel okay about saying no to projects that somebody else could do, and instead only do the things that only you can do. And actually, it's interesting. I then talked to a subsequent boss and said to him, you know, look, you know, there's all this work to be done. I can do all of these projects, but I really don't think you're going to get the right value out of me, because this is the one that I think only I could do. I think that these other five projects, anyone else could do, or other people could do, but other people could do. Mm. And so why wouldn't you want to focus my time in the thing that only I could do?
Yes.
I think that having that really good, strong sense of what you're good at, what your strengths are, and making sure that you really try and spend most of your time doing the things that only you can do, I think really helps you to, A, be a better boss because you delegate other stuff. I think it helps you to a confidence about the value that you add to an organization and be very clear about that. And I think it helps you to make sure that you spend most of your time doing things that you enjoy and that you're good at. And I think that there's certainly, when I was younger, there was this sort of view of leadership that, you know, you have to be a kind of universal leader and you have to be able to do everything equally well. And I think that there's now a much more kind of interesting school of thought that says, actually, you should play to your strengths.
Yes.
I think that that was a helpful intervention for me that many years ago, because I have tended to do that. And I think that that's served me well in my career.
Again, a wonderful, crisp, clear leadership reflection insight. Lovely. With the gift of hindsight, what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of Antonia Wade?
I think there are periods in your life where, you know, you worry about all of the things that could happen. And I think my general advice to myself would be, it's going to be okay. It's going to be fine. And, you know, I think that I am lucky that things are okay and they are fine. And I found a job that I love, in a company that I really like, and got a fantastic team. I've got an interesting job. I've accomplished a lot. And I think that there have been periods of my life where I've just been so worried about, will I fulfill my potential? Will I get that opportunity? Will I, you know, will I be able to find things I like doing? Will I be able to find a man that I want to be with for the rest of my life? You know, like you worry about all of these things when you're younger. And you spend a lot of time and energy worrying about it. So yeah, I kind of feel like I would want to go and just put a reassuring motherly arm around my younger self and just say, it's going to be fine.
I love that. It's going to be fine. So we're ramping up shortly to talk about Shakespeare and to talk about legacy and how you'd most like to be remembered shortly. But just before we get there, this is the pass the golden baton moment, please. Now you've experienced this from within. This is a bit like they don't like it up by Mr. Mannering. But who might you most like to pass the golden baton along to, as Timothy Tim Hughes did to you, to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going? Who might you most like to pass the golden baton along to?
Yeah, thank you. So there's somebody that I met at work years ago, and then we became great friends. We had children at the same time. Our children are great friends. We live quite close. We see each other a lot. But she's also a phenomenal inspirational leader, a phenomenal marketer. So her name is Bonnie Pelosi, and she is the head of marketing for EMEA, which is Europe, Middle East and Africa, for Microsoft. But not only is she a really impressive marketer and leader, she's just a really nice person. I think you'd enjoy meeting her.
And just say her name one more time. Bonnie Pelosi, did you say?
Yeah.
And that sounds like it's onomatopoeic. It was spelt like it sounds. It sounds to me.
Yeah.
So your mission, should you choose to accept it, thank you very much, is to furnish me with a warm introduction to Bonnie Pelosi. Thank you.
I will do.
And now, inspired by Shakespeare and all the worlds of stage, I've got occasional props that I sometimes whip out. This is the actual complete works. It's not a first folio, but I took this to drama school, the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, way back when, and it says 16986 in the cover. So this is legacy now, borrowed from the seven ages of man's speech, all the worlds of stage and all the billy players. When all is said and done, Antonia Wade, how would you most like to be remembered?
I think that I would like to be remembered as an inspirational female leader. I think there's not many female leaders, and I think I take seriously my responsibility to be a role model to women who want to have a family and want to have an exciting and big job. There's not many of us around, and I believe passionately that you can at least have some modicum of having it all as a woman. And I take seriously my role modeling ability to do that. So I think that that's how I'd like to be remembered.
How beautifully put, a modicum of knowing and realizing that you can have it all. Fantastic. Really good. So now we're going to do a very exciting thing, which is show us your QR code, please. So if you're watching this online, this is now the QR code to your book, which is Transforming the B2B Buyer Journey. So would you like to tell us quickly the story behind the story of your good book?
Thank you. Yeah, well, I mentioned the fact that I had this 3 months off and my husband was like, please do something because you're going to drive me insane if not. And so I went on this writing course and wrote probably about a third of it, but I'd already had a publishing deal by then. And so then I kind of felt like I had to finish it. I'm definitely somebody who, once I say that I'll do something, I'll do it. But then I got this big job, so I spent a lot of time in airports and on airplanes kind of writing the book. I hope it's a helpful guide for those people who are in business-to-business marketing, which is pretty underwritten about. There's not much in terms of help and guidance. It's a way of thinking about everything from how to think about campaigns right through to how to make money, to how to talk to your CFO about the value of marketing. And I really wrote it kind of almost to your point before about my younger self, for my younger self, to distill all the things I'd learned in what I hope is something helpful for people who are a bit more younger, I guess, in their journey.
And so that's Transforming the B2B Buyer Journey. If you're able to watch this, there is a QR code. But if people do want to go and find it, it is at Kogan Paul. Is that the right?
It's Kogan Page is the author, but you can get it on Amazon as well. So,
yes. Also, I didn't mention yet, but you are the Marketing Week Awards 2024 winner. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that too?
Yeah, it was really nice, actually. So when Marketing Week told me about it, I said to them, you know, it's pretty rare to be surprised these days, like, you know, kind of get to a certain age and stage and you sort of are pretty unflappable. But I was really, really surprised. I'm the first B2B winner of it. And it's not something where you know, some of these award things, you know, you apply for and so you're in the mix. But I didn't apply for it. I was nominated by a panel. And so it really came out of nowhere for me. And I was absolutely thrilled. They did a beautiful award ceremony. And so I put a rare sight of me in a long dress and high heels and went and got my award. And I honestly, I'm so, so proud of it. I'm still really surprised and thrilled about it.
A bit of a cherry on the cake of an already 100%. Illustrious career, which 100%. Is fantastic.
Yeah.
If you'd like to connect with Antonia on LinkedIn, here's the second. Show us your QR code, please. You may also be watching this on LinkedIn, but if you haven't, I'm sorry, if you might end up getting stalked by lots of people on LinkedIn who want to then join your profile. In fact, I'm still pending myself, Antonia. Did you know?
Oh, sorry. That's bad admin. All right. I will make sure that I accept you.
I didn't just show this QR code so you make sure you connect.
That's actually genuinely bad admin of me, though. I'm, again, usually pretty good at that. So,
well, you've got a fairly important job, so that's okay. That was only being facetious.
Well, as I said, I'm going to see our central European team in Prague on Monday, which I can't wait. But that means I'm on a flight on Sunday, so it means I can get all of my LinkedIn admin done. I'll definitely do it.
Thank you so much. As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, Antonia Wade, Global Chief Marketing Officer of PwC, is there anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I mean, firstly, I'd like to say thank you, Chris. I've really enjoyed it. It's a very different and unusual way of kind of unlocking your story. It's been very, very enjoyable. So thank you very much. I love the format. I guess the only last thing that I would say is that, you know, this is supposed to be about leadership lessons. So hopefully people have found something somewhat helpful. And you know, a bit like I would say to my younger self, you know, I would encourage people who are listening to be curious, but also be bold and be ambitious and, you know, make sure that you fulfill your potential and ask for the things that you want and be uncompromising in the decisions that you make. Think about that 5-year future self and the decisions you made 5 years ago that got you here today. And remember that you're on a continuum. So you might as well push for the things that you want. You don't always get what you want, but you certainly don't get what you want if you don't ask for it.
What a wonderful reincorporation of the wisdom of the leadership lessons you've served up along the way as we've had this wonderful, delightful conversation. Just a quick outro stuff from me as well. If you'd like a conversation about being my guest too, then the website for the show is thegoodlisteningtoshow.com. There are 7 different series strands, one of which particularly exciting at the moment. This has been Leadership Reflections. There's one called Brand Strand Founder Stories, but the one I'm really, really excited about is called Legacy Life Reflections, which is to record the story of somebody near, dear, or close to you for posterity, lest we forget before it's too late, using the construct of this show. Sorry, Antonia, that's just me giving information in the background. If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn as well, you can do that here. Hurrah, hooray, haroo. And thank you very much indeed. So thank you so much to Antonia Wade for joining me in the show. It's been an absolute delight. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Antonia?
No, just say thank you very much and have a nice weekend.
Thank you very much indeed, and good night.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at thegoodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of the series strands is called Leadership Reflections, for business leaders or those of you that work in the leadership domain to be able to share your leadership lessons learned along your way. Maybe you'd like to play it forward as you move from one leadership opportunity to the next. Maybe you're about to stop and you'd like to drop the mic to preserve your leadership legacy, or you may just want to consolidate where you already are as you share your leadership reflections. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing, and don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.